partner, Deborah Gordon, and we're happy to meet you, Mr. Gordon. We're here for Pittsburgh Section National Council of Jewish Women Oral History 2. And we would like to know something about your background. I believe I forgot to say this is September the 19th, 1989. I know there's much for you to tell in the little bit of time that we have, and we don't expect you to tell it all. But why don't you start with where you were born and go from there?
I was born and raised in the Hill District on Center Avenue, Patrick Street. It was a vibrant neighborhood. My memories of it are just full of a very vital, exciting area to be in. At that time, it was predominantly Jewish, with large pockets of Italians, smaller pockets of Irish, Germans, blacks, and others. The merchants were predominantly Jewish, and reaching from Fulton Street, the area at which the present Civic Arena is in, there were stores on both sides of the street extending all the way out to Kirkpatrick Street and the Soho area. They were butcher shops, bakeries, restaurants which specialized in ethnic food, kosher restaurants. Shoe businesses, you name it, everything was in the Hill District. Benkowitz Fish Market was the Hill District, for example. We would go down and get the fish, which would be wrapped in newspaper. The butcher shops, and there was a multiplicity of all of these. The Iron Kaufman Settlement was a big meeting place for all the young boys and girls, which they got a nice background in arts and crafts and dancing and athletics. In fact, there were so many Jewish boys playing basketball at that time that all the outstanding basketball teams were comprised of Jewish boys, and they were winning teams in the different competitions were held. Ziggy Kahn was very influential in guiding these boys in the proper direction.
What was his last name?
Ziggy Kahn, K-A-H-N. Fifth Avenue High School was an old school, but it was a lovely school, Gothic architecture. And from that came physicians and attorneys and engineers and scientists. Our leading citizens of that time were Fifth Avenue High School graduates. Today, that school is a commercial building. My father was in the shoe business. As a young boy, I remember him at the bench late at night fixing shoes. They also retailed shoes. Dad was indentured in Lithuania for 13 years. Almost as a slave, in which he learned this business.
So he was capable of making shoes?
He could take an animal, and from that animal, tan the hide, skin it, do everything, and make a pair of shoes from that animal. And Gordon's was probably a cornerstone in that area as long as I can remember. The business is still alive, and it would be about 106 years of continuous being in business. Dad was a kind man. He never refused anybody who was in poverty or at the moment maybe unable to buy shoes. He charged. If they paid, it was okay. If they didn't pay, it was okay. So Gordon's was an institution.
What was your father's name?
Benjamin. On Saturdays, the streets were full of people, almost from sidewalk to sidewalk, promenading as they do in the Easter parade in New York.
It must have been a marvelous sight.
It was. Many of the homes didn't have plumbing, so you would have lines of people at the various bathhouses, the Soho Bath, Cowson's Bath, the Iron Kaufman Settlement Bathhouse, and they would line up, and there they would receive towels and soap, probably for a nickel or maybe even free. And so that was a continuing event. The Turkish bathhouses were always full. The men would come in to lose weight, get switched with the birch branches, and move up the different levels to sweat.
What do you mean get switched with the birch?
That's how they would flog their flesh to stimulate it. See, after the steam, they would flagellate. And this would stimulate the flow of blood and everything. And then they would move up the different levels of steps in which the heat would be stronger as the higher up you went. And then they would eat salami and put back everything that they had just sweated off.
They didn't know about cholesterol either, did
no.
they?
So it was a meeting place. They had many little restaurants, confectionery stores, and the back room of which they had pool tables. And on every pool table, if someone was busy gambling, cards, or the public officials allowed this minor breaking of the law to go on without ever bothering them. So the young men and were exposed to that sort of influence as they grew up. Some of them were able to rise above it. Many of them became racketeers and number writers. But the area was alive during the Prohibition era. Often I would see a wall of a garage or an office broken down and be by the revenue agents, internal revenue agents. And behind that you would see the stills and the varied bottles of whiskey. In fact, across the street from our store, there had been a Haller Baking Company in which they made breads, and the wagons were always being brought up to the loading docks. As times changed, Haller's went out of business, and someone began to cook whiskey in there. And they had every kind of bottle that you could think of, rock crystal, and it all came out of the same vat.
Where was this?
That was directly across from Gordon's Shoe Store on Heeman Street.
Heeman Street?
Yeah.
Never heard of that. How do you spell it?
H-E-M-A-N. Just trying to reminisce a little bit. About a block from our home, you could go down and get milk directly from the cows. The Horowitz family, Dave Horowitz, who eventually had a automobile agency in Squirrel Hill where Black Gulf now exists, his father had these cows. And he would walk them in the street, which they would just leave their droppings, and until the city finally passed the law that you couldn't have these animals in the city. But as a child, I would go down and get fresh milk. It wasn't pasteurized.
Is this a daily activity?
Oh, yes, yes. Gas was still used in many homes, and many is the day that I would be sent down the street as a little child to buy a gas mantle.
Gas was used for light, you mean?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Some of the homes had electricity, many of them had the gas. Are you familiar with the gas mantle?
Not really.
It almost looks like a banana. The shape, but you know, it's a tube, round tube, and it's made out of a mica, and you would put that over the gas jet, and then it would get hot and glow, and that would give light.
No electricity.
Yeah, they use them in camping lamps.
I see. Where did you go to school then? You went to
Fifth Avenue High School, and then I studied art as a child at the Irving Kaufman Settlement. They had classes. Art was supposed to be my career, and then I got pushed into dentistry.
Where did you go to dental school?
University of Pittsburgh. I got pushed into dentistry because I refused to take up anything except art. So the family used force on me. My brother Charles was a dentist, very eminent, generous man. He was so well thought of that when they wrote a book about the life of Jock Sutherland, they said in that book that Charles Gordon was his most intimate and cherished friend. And even though Jock Sutherland was a Protestant, I mentioned the fact that he often came to the home of the Gordons for kosher food. My brother Charles sponsored a boys' club, the Doc Gordon Club. And most of these boys were impoverished. He supplied them with food, a little bit of spending money, bought them the uniforms, and helped many of them get jobs. He had a lot of political power because people loved him, but he never used it for his own purpose. It was always to help people who couldn't be helped by other people.
Isn't that wonderful?
He didn't do things where it was going to benefit him. So many is the boy that he got into medical school and dental school and got jobs for them in the post office and other places. In fact, during the war, they would say, Charlie, now that you got me a job in a war plant, can you get me an alarm clock? Now that you got me on the police force, can you get me a gun? He was called upon to bring families to get together where they were broken up, to get people out of trouble when they were involved with the law. And year after year, different boys became members of the Doc Gordon Club and played basketball, and this went on for years and years and years. His teams were so good that a lot of the others almost refused to compete. They won like the Allegheny Amateur Mountain Association trophies, but he was just a great person, a great athlete on his own. He belonged to the coffee club.
Well, was he your inspiration for becoming a dentist? Or
no, he was the force. He was an inspiration for me not to become a dentist. He was so busy. He had so many people cluttering up his hallways waiting to be service by him because he never charged anybody. In fact, when my brother died, he didn't have money to be buried. My dad would always say, "It's lucky Charlie wasn't born a girl. He can never say no." he gave himself away completely. Now, I just wanted to be an artist, and that was it. I really wasn't influenced by one way or another. I was a little facetious there. But Charlie was a great contributor to the youth of Pittsburgh.
This is all very interesting, but I want to hear more about you. What happened when after dental school? Where did you open your office and so forth?
Oh, when I left dental school, I refused to practice because my heart was in dentistry. And Dad said to me, "Go to school for at least 6 months, take up anything you want." I says, "No art, no dentistry." So my brother Charles kicked me in the rear end from my home to the University of Pittsburgh, which was a few blocks away. And I had crocodile tears as he signed me up for dentistry. It was a 5-year course at that time. I was so anxious to get through with it because I didn't know how to quit. I graduated in 4 years. Then I
must have been a very good student.
Then I refused to practice, and they couldn't believe it. And I loafed for 1 year with them. I loafed for 1 year, and they, in frustration, they opened an office with my brother Charles, and I began to get the free patients that were flowing out of the overflow. I vowed to myself that if I were to be a dentist, I would at least get the pleasure of being a good one. And I did succeed in that. And I've had 55 years of very successful practice.
It's wonderful, and I trust you have charged your patients something.
It took me a long time to learn to become a businessman. When I knew people, I still treated everybody as though they were a friend. I still had compassion. I wasn't trying to be the richest dentist. I was trying to be a good dentist. And there was a lot of rapport between the patients and myself.
And you're still practicing?
Yeah, I'm 77. And January of this year, I finally agreed with my partners to pull out of the partnership, and I had brought a couple younger men in with me who had been partners for 20 years, and I'm not practicing 2 days a week. How long that will continue, I don't know. And now I'm taking up my hobby of art, which is keeping me quite happy.
Dan, could you tell us a little bit about how your art developed? Who recognized your talent in the early years? Anybody in your family that influenced you?
My brother Morris was a fine artist.
How many, excuse me, I want you to continue, but...
When I went to grade school, they had drawings that they had saved when he had been a young student there, and I was quite surprised at his talent. Then it seemed to me like I was always drawing, and then I went to the Aaron Kaufman Settlement neighborhood school, in which they had fine teachers like Rosenberg from Carnegie Tech and Schulbold. These were top men.
What was that last person's name?
Schulbold. He went to New York where he made art his profession. Rosenberg went on to achieve fame as one of Pittsburgh's leading artists. In fact, he did a painting of Fulton Street in which he showed the open stalls with the baskets and baskets of vegetables and fruit and the owner and his yamoki and children that were helping with the selling and servicing the customers. And Fulton Street was that was an atmosphere of its own. On either side of the street, you had these open stalls, groceries, vegetables, meats, bakeries, and the sidewalks and streets were just thronged with people from the neighborhood and coming from the surrounding small towns to make their purchases. When I went to high school, the high school teacher gave me an exercise, a charcoal drawing, and she was impressed with what I had done. And I seemed to become her favorite student. When they started the Scholastic Art Contest, first Scholastic Art Contest, Scholastic Magazine, about 1928. I took second prize in Western Pennsylvania with my first oil painting. The last time I saw it was on the 10th floor of Kaufman's Auditorium on exhibition. Someone stole it.
Oh.
But at that moment I didn't. I wasn't that unhappy because I felt that I would be an artist and I would be doing a lot of painting, but also that I would know that there would be over 50 years intervening between my starting to paint again. I was just recently accepted into the Associated Artists. I did have a painting on display at the Associated Artists at Carnegie Museum in 1937. That's the only thing I had done for 7 years after leaving high school. And then
submitted to Carnegie Mellon?
To the Associated Artists, and the exhibition was in Carnegie Museum.
Okay.
So that was accepted. So I had talent waiting to be developed, and I just never developed it because I was so busy with my practice and with my family. And I will often say, I wonder what happened to Herman Gordon. What happened to that fellow? That individual used to be on the parallel bars that played the lead in the class play, Fifth Avenue High School. And the fellow that was a social director. I mean, fellow that played ball for the Navy softball team, where I happened to miss. I've spent 4 years in the Navy. I left as a lieutenant commander. I thought I might stay, but every 2 years you moved to a new place and you had to start making new friendships. And I fell in love with my present wife, and I didn't think she was Navy material, so I left.
Your wife's name?
Geraldine Gordon. She was Geraldine Edelson. Her father had the famous Sondell hat shop. Everyone wore hats in those years, and they were busy.
Where was this located?
On Fifth Avenue.
What was the name of it again?
Sondell. S-O-N-D-E-L-L.
And you mentioned that you had other brothers and sisters?
Yes. Brother Morris, Tommy, Irwin. Morris continued the shoe store. He practically raised us. He had injured himself as a young fellow, so he dropped out of high school and he took over the store, and he looked after the children. Father never had the benefit of a formal education, but he was an extremely intelligent man, and he made his own hieroglyphics. Then I had two sisters, Dorothy Shirley. Irwin was a school teacher. I think Shirley graduated as a teacher. Sure. Tommy graduated Pitt, and he joined my brother Morris in the shoe business.
So you were all college educated?
Yeah.
And Dorothy?
Dad felt that there were only two things of importance to him in this world: food on the table and an education. All the superfluous things of life were meaningless to him, but education and food was important. My sister Dorothy was, I think, what was that girl's school she went to where she sang? I don't know if it was Pittsburgh Academy, but she went to a school for girls and had a beautiful singing voice. She graduated and got a job as a private secretary at the time when very, very few women were in the commercial world.
It sounds like you were a very artistic family. All of you had some...
Yeah, she had a beautiful singing voice. Oh, Tommy would often blast us out of the house playing the saxophone. When the first radio sets were on the market, you would take an oatmeal box and wrap brass wires around it, and you would be able to get radio sounds from it. And then later on, Galena crystal was used, and you had a little wire that you would move over the galena, and that would pick up the sound waves. And this was the early radio, and Tommy was involved in that. He had an aerial on the roof of our house. Looked like two poles, probably 2 floors high. You figured if the wind blew, it would pull the whole roof off. And we were all interested in radio. As a side venture, he opened up a radio shop. But he was involved in so many other things, the shoe business and so forth, that he would often have me watch the store and forget that I was there. He would never show up. But
this was when you were younger, before you went into dentistry.
That's when I was still in high school. But primarily, Tommy was involved in the shoe business with my brother Morris. And when the Gordon Shoe Store was burned out of business during the Martin Luther riots, that was traumatic, absolutely traumatic. The neighborhood had been turning black.
That was in 1960, wasn't it?
1967.
The neighborhood was turning black, and many of the black families were moving away from the blacks, the more educated ones. Gordon still continued to live in the home where the business was and where we were born. Most of us were born, not in the hospital. And Dad never differentiated between color, race, religion, and he showed the same kindness toward these people as he did toward anyone else. And it was, Dad had passed away when the riots occurred, but my brother Morris was so disillusioned, so hurt, that he just never went into the business again. And my brother Tommy, after old customers repeatedly called, where can I get a pair of shoes and this and that, he was almost pushed into opening up again, and he opened up in Bloomfield in an old real estate office, and the store continued to expand, and my son entered the picture. So the Gordons have just continued into the shoe business, and now he is one of the principal owners, and it is a huge, big family shoe store now. You could see the changes that were occurring. As a child, I remember where just about every commercial vehicle was horse and wagon, and the men in the harshest winters sat on the outer part of the wagon on like a bench, or sometimes in like a little covered area. But it was harsh, it was cold, and I would be running down to the basement to get these Arctics and felt hip boots, which would fit into the rubber Arctic and go up to their knees in order to keep them warm. Well, you saw this gradually changing from horse and wagon to automobile. And Dave Horvitz and Cy Alpern had one of the early Pontiac agencies on Center Avenue. It was in an old church building. And the display window was so small that they had trouble getting one small Pontiac in that diagonal.